Hey, how's it going, everybody? This is Chris. Welcome to episode 16 of NML Crossing, where I'm reporting in live from the squeaky chair, which is a little bit squeakier than usual today. I don't know what it is. Maybe I'm sitting weird. Maybe it's just that I haven't sat in the chair in a couple days and I got to break it back in. I don't know. Anyway, today we have we've got kind of an issue, kind of an afterthought of an issue. We'll get there, of course, but we do have a pretty jam-packed back end of today's episode, so I won't waste too much time with pre-rambling here. I will say that for those following along in real time, this week, if everything goes according to plan, we will be wrapping up the Cataclysm story, and if you want to play along at home, the books we'll be reading this week are Catwoman 57, which is today's episode. Then Batman, Arkham Asylum, Tales of Madness number 1. Then we wrap up Cataclysm in Robin number 53. We jump into Aftershock with Shadow of the Bat 75 and wrap it up with Batman 555. It promises to be, a regular week, I guess. I don't know. Let's hop into today's book. This is, of course, Catwoman 57. Had a May 1998 cover date. The story is called Cataclysm, Part 15, Reap What You Sow, written by Devin Grayson, with pencils by Jim Ballant, don't know. Inks, John Stanisi, colors, Buzz Setzer, letters, Albert de Guzman, edits, Gorfinkel and O'Neill, cover price, $1.95. Now, we open with some very wordy narration captions from our titular heroine. Selina's walking on the ruined streets of Gotham until happening across a Wayne Tech building. And of course, since it is Wayne, it still stands. And so she hops in via a busted-out window. Inside, she spots Poison Ivy tending to some plants. And, looks like this branch of Wayne Tech specializes in fertilizer? I mean, we got big ol' vats of it everywhere here. Okay. Now, we follow Ivy down to those fertilizer vats. And, you see, she's got a plan on how she might take advantage of this new Gotham. I believe in an interview, Devin Grayson said that she sees the destruction of Gotham as mulch. And where, you know, it's the Poison Ivy thing. She's trying to take, you know, let the green take over Gotham, basically. Now, Catwoman looks on as a lab geek approaches Pam with a test tube full of some sort of heavy-duty fertilization formula. It's like a test tube with, like, little stuff floating in it. Now, Ivy takes a taste of the liquid fertilizer from the vats, which nearly causes Selina to retch. Then, Ivy manifests some vines from those vats, which wrap up the lab dude. Selina kinda sees this as a power move, and also kind of respects her for it. Still, though, she figures it's probably best that she get out of Dodge for now, lest she wind up on the receiving end of these vines. Now, we follow Selina as she crawls through some vents, as she's wont to do. But, you know, she gets a little away, and then her conscience gets the better of her. That's been happening a lot lately, hasn't it? And so she decides to turn back and see if there's anything she can do to help save the lab guy. And so we're back to the vats, where Selina whips the vines to free the fella, but it looks like she was just a little bit too late. You see, dude's already got, like, disgusting mushrooms growing out of his... This is disgusting. It's skeevy, gross. This is like a trigger I didn't know I had. This is disgusting. At this point, Ivy's vines have already started to wrap themselves around Catwoman. Ivy sees this as an opportunity to pontificate a bit, and she basically says what I said earlier. She explains how it's the perfect time for Gotham to thrive in purity and to brim with a new green health. So, you know, the plants will take over, right? Anyway, once her speech is done, she leaves. Our heroine is able to whip herself free before she could be mushroomed or whatever. She gives chase to Ivy and is then attacked by a tree, which she kicks and hurts her leg. It's an especially odd chase scene, I'd say. Now, outside, Ivy is pouring some of that super fertilizer formula stuff into some vegetation and, unless I'm just not following it, it looks like there's already a massive tree growing out of the concrete or the whatever the hell it is. I don't know. Anyway, Catwoman continues making her way out. And then, the hell is this? Harvey Bullock shows up? Didn't we just? Isn't he dealing with that hostage thing with the Bach over at the hangar or warehouse, whatever? I could have sworn we just left him there. Almost enough to ask, when in the hell is this story supposed to be happening, and why is it labeled Chapter 15? Yeah, I think it was last episode where I said it felt like DC and the bad offices might have had a few too many, you know, plates spinning at once here. I think this issue is a sure sign of that, but, again, what do I know? What do I know? Anyway, Harvey, who is wearing a sling, remember he was impaled, we haven't seen him wearing a sling up till this point, but he's wearing a sling now, he attempts to place Ivy under arrest. He even calls out to Montoya for help. I don't know if it was over the radio or not, it's not clear. It's like he yells, Montoya. He also yells out for someone called Sung, who I've never heard of, though, again, I don't know all the members of the GCPD. Especially not back then. So yeah, Harvey's got Ivy held up at gunpoint until she begins to unleash her botanical and feminine wiles upon him. She basically convinces him that he wants to make out with her. But thankfully we've got Catwoman playing the role of a cold shower for old Harv. Bullock assumes that Catwoman and Poison Ivy are working together, and he expresses surprise that it took them this long to team up. Even if they were teaming up, this wouldn't have been the first time. It looks like their first time actually occurred in Batman Family number 17, May 1978, which is an issue I don't think Harvey read, and, well, it was pre-crisis anyway, so does it even matter? Who knows? Now, Catwoman kind of convinces Bullock that they're on the same side. Sorta. Okay. Remember there was that massive tree, right? So we got this giant tree popping up through the sidewalk. And Selina suggests that she and Harvey try pulling it out of the ground by the roots. Have any of you ever tried pulling a full-size tree out of the ground by the root? Yeah, me too. Anyway, after about a page and a half of tugging, these two ordinary humans, one of whom looks like he's constantly on the verge of a heart attack, managed to yoink a mature tree out of concrete. Yeah. Okay, from here, Selina returns to the Wayne Tech building to check on Ivy's accomplice. And he's like 85% mushroom at this point. And it's like really gross. I mean, this is the sort of thing that kept me away from playing Last of Us for as long as it did. It just, mushrooms gross me out. Our gal reaches into the pocket of this guy, and she's trying to find some clues about the next stop in Poison Ivy's magical fertilization tour, I guess. And she finds a folded note with several locations on it. I think it's here that we find out that the Wayne Tech building that we're currently in is the landscaping arm of the Wayne Empire. Seriously? I mean, it's Gotham City. How much landscaping is there to do? Do people have, like, lush lawns? Maybe it's just for Bruce's manor, I don't know. Anyway, Selina susses it out and figures out that Ivy is headed to Gotham's Reservoir Park, which totally stands to reason if, you know, Ivy's trying to spread this voodoo miracle grow, right? It's put it in the water source, it goes everywhere, bada bing, bada boom, everything's green. And so, one page later, we are at that reservoir. And would you look at that? Ivy's there, preparing to dump that vial into the drink. She's, like, just dramatically holding this vial. I don't know why we need the pageantry, but we're getting it. Selina attempts to sneak up on her, but winds up stepping on some, I don't know, popping seeds. Not poppy seeds, but popping seeds. Like, she steps on them and they pop. Now, this, of course, alerts Ivy to her presence, and so she just tosses the vial waterward. Catwoman dives in after the falling vial and manages to wrap the end of her weird cat of however many tails whip around it. Now, at this point, Selina is, like, just barely hanging onto the railing. She's dangling over the water source. She's got her whip. The end of the whip is this vial, right? Now, Ivy scratches Catwoman's hand with her poisonous fingernails, and Selina responds to this by whipping the vial directly into Ivy's face. Now, before we know it, our baddie has all sorts of vegetation growing out of her face. And again, I mean, maybe this issue should come with, like, a very, very crisp, specific trigger warning, because plants are gross. I mean, this stuff really is nasty stuff. Anyway, we wrap up with Ivy being handed over to Bullock and the gang and Selena looking out into the night. And I'm guessing we are in a completely Wayne-owned neighborhood because it doesn't look like there's any earthquake damage here. As a matter of fact, the entire area around the reservoir is still standing and looks great. So, who knows? Oh well, that is where we leave it. Next time out, our third and final one-shot of the Cataclysm arm of our journey here, leg of our journey, some body part of our journey, it is Arkham Tales of Madness. But for now, let's talk about this issue, which I don't have a whole heck of a lot to say. It was kind of a mess, a little bit. Not just from a, like, when does this happen, how does this fit perspective, but I mean, it's kind of just a meh story in and of itself. It was also, has nothing to do with the story, but it was also one of the most difficult issues to track down out of this entire NML Crossing project. Even if you were to look for this issue online, there were like 3 copies floating around, and the cheapest one is like $15. I managed to luck into a copy, though it wasn't cheap. I did pay a bit of a premium for it. I think I paid like $6 for it, which is high for me, especially, you know, for a book like Catwoman, though, you know, I guess Catwoman was probably a book that was not printed to the levels of a Batman or, you know, a Detective Comics, but I did pay like $6 for it because it was labeled as a newsstand edition. I don't know how to tell these things apart. I guess I could have checked the indicia or compared barcodes, but it was labeled as a newsstand edition, so I paid the newsstand tax of $6. It was a toughie to track down, is what I'm trying to say, and was it worth it? Well, from a project standpoint, of course it was. You know, we're all or nothing here on this show, but otherwise, you know, it kind of just was what it was. I mean, I suppose if I look at this as just a story, it was fine, I guess. It just didn't really land for me. I always get caught up in the minutiae and how the sausage is made and my projections on how the sausage is made, which is not a good way to be. But to me, this one feels very much like they realized at the last moment that they had assigned 2 issues of Catwoman to the numbered Cataclysm cross event proper and maybe had to scramble, you know, because it's a fairly innocuous story. It makes sense, you know, that Poison Ivy would try to take advantage of this situation and would try to propagate foliage and plant all over, you know, Gotham City, this new Gotham City, this former Gotham City. So it makes sense, but it just feels kind of scrambly. Devin Grayson's work usually feels a lot more structured and put together than this. Again, projection, talking out my ass, whatever it is, this issue felt like they were kind of in a oops, just get it done sort of situation. I don't know. That's my takeaway. I don't know. I mean, even the art kind of had a rushed feel to it. Maybe I'm imagining it. Who knows? Who knows? Not much more to say about it. Overall, I would say this is probably the least essential Cataclysm chapter. And I say that not counting Robin number 52, which was total Red Sky territory, so it's really not fair to include that one. For completionists, of course you're going to want this, but if you are just casually working your way through the storyline, it might not be one you really need to break your back or your bank trying to track down and procure. But now let's hop into some back-end ephemera stuff here. You all know I've been looking at various periodicals from this time period, various comic book periodicals, obviously, in order to, you know, kind of take the temperature of what the fandom and the press were thinking about the, you know, the big shakeup in Gotham, no pun intended. But as I was digging through Wizard magazines, I saw that there was actually a Wizard Batman special put out in 1998, which was promoted as having some Cataclysm information in it, some Quake information in it. And although I bought pretty much everything with a Wizard logo on it for most of the 90s and sadly most of the 2000s, I assumed I had this thing somewhere. I'm like, oh, I'll just go dig it up out of a different box, and I can, you know, get to the business of covering it and including it in our coverage. And I didn't have it. It turns out that this is like the one Wizard special that I don't own. So I got a few places I want to check, some places nearby that might have a copy of the Batman special that I can, you know, buy and officially, you know, log into the library. But I did want to include it before we left the Cataclysm storyline, since so much of it has to do with Cataclysm. It was released like right during Cataclysm. There's some projection into the future, some forecasting as to what might come out of it. So I thought this would be the most appropriate time to cover this special. And so I turned to an old pal of mine, Adam, a.k.a. Hojo Coolander from the Wizards podcast, which hopefully I will remember to link in the show notes. If I don't, please call me out and let me know and I can update whatever. My brain gets kind of scrambly when I'm uploading. It's like exhaustive. I'm like exhausted after recording, and the upload process has kind of become, I don't know, muscle memory, I guess. But great show, great guys over there, and I was hooked up with a scan while I try to procure a hard copy of my own here. If it comes to it, I guess I could order it online, but I do always like to exhaust all my local haunts before I do that. And we're going to talk more about that in next episode, because with the Arkham one-shot, I had to break a rule of mine, and it didn't feel good, but sometimes you gotta do what you gotta do. But a big thanks to Adam for hooking me up with the scan here, and allowing me, or facilitating me, going into this little section. Now, for the most part, this Batman special is pretty much exactly what you would expect from a Wizard special. You know, a lot of stuff about origins, a lot of, like, the 50 things you wish you knew about Batman, and all that kind of, you know, like the silly kind of fluff that that Wizard would sometimes do. So we get a lot of that, a lot of, like, you know, this is Batman if his costume was this color, and just, and, you know, the top 50 Batman stories of all time, and spoiler alert, Dark Knight gets it, of course, which is a story I've never actually read to completion, Dark Knight Returns. I've started it so many times. And it was actually one of the first Batman stories that that I owned. I was given a, I think it was like Long Meadow Press put out a hardcover, like a very like plush sort of collection here. Like there was the cover, it was a hardcover, but it was like fluffy kind of. It was like, it was really, really nice. Like leather, maybe it was leather, I don't know. But it was the complete Frank Miller Batman, and it came with Year One, obviously, and then there was Santa Claus Wanted Dead or Alive, and then there was Dark Knight Returns. It was all in this one, like, beautiful package, and God, I tried reading Dark Knight Returns so many times, and I just did not care for it at all. Maybe one of these days I'll, you know, revisit it, but I might have to turn in, like, my Batman fan ID card for not having read that. Though, if you've listened to this show up to this point, you'll know that I'm no expert. Anyway, so yeah, it's all that kind of stuff in here. But there are two articles that do tie into, well, what we're talking about here. And the first one is called Dark Times, written by Joe Nazzaro. And it's a pretty good, yet kind of frustrating piece regarding the Bat family of books going into the Cataclysm era. And the books that we have labeled as, like, the core Bat books, there are three of them. Three regular slash core books, and it's Detective Batman and Shadow of the Bat. And during my Wizard research here, going back even, you know, like a couple of years prior to Cataclysm, and this was largely accidental research. Like, I was pulling issues of Wizard off the shelf in the dark. So I was like, oh, this one feels like it should be around 1998. And I, like, really pulled one out from early 97 or something. But, you know, you get the books, you flip through them, and what are you going to do? But I do remember there being a piece about the, not so much streamlining, but the self-contained nature of the Bat books. Like, the one-of-one era, you know, like, where the Bat books have a little Bat emblem on the cover, and it would say part one of one, just to let you know, hey, you buy this issue, you're getting a complete story. You don't got to buy 800 books to follow this. It's one and done. And I remember Wizard mentioning that. I don't remember the issue. I should have written it down. But they described the books as follows. Detective was going to be more procedural. And indeed, that's what Chuck Dixon says in the interview we're going to get to. The Batman title would focus on horror and superheroics and supernatural sort of stuff. And Shadow of the Bat would be psychological thrillers. And we'll get deeper into that as we go. There are two anthologies, Legends of the Dark Knight and Batman Chronicles. And both of those are described as having sometimes veered into Elseworlds territory. So if you buy Legends or Chronicles, you're not guaranteed to get in-continuity stories all the time. And they are described as very seldom tying into the ongoing narrative, which there will be tie-ins as we go forward. I mean, we already read an issue of Chronicles here on the show, but let's get into it here. We're going to go title by title. The first one is Detective. And again, Chuck Dixon describes this book as having police procedural mysteries. But he says not any of the out-of-nowhere Murder, She Wrote type mysteries, which is like, I think the example they use here is like they found like a paperclip on the floor and that automatically told them who done it. And, well, I mean, that last issue of Detective we discussed might argue that point. That felt kind of convenient. He says that he enjoys using characters like Montoya and Bullock, and that he also created a pair of homicide cops named Moses and Murphy. I can't remember either of those. Chuck talks up his Huntress story in Detective 720, and he brings up how Helena will often make decisions that Batman wouldn't approve of. And I mean, that's been a pretty big talking point in this program since Helena popped up on our chessboard. And it's been one of the strongest parts of it, I believe. Not the program. I mean, the program is what it is, but the Cataclysm story, the clash of philosophies. We get some upcoming tech issues here. We got that Green Arrow crossover, Brotherhood of the Fist. Then we have a Mr. Freeze and Azrael story. And then Lois Lane will spend a couple issues in Gotham City. Now, outside of the martial arts bit, the Brotherhood of the Fist, I don't remember any of that. I do know that Mr. Freeze will be showing up in Shadow of the Bat 75. And, I mean, Azrael has his own book, and like 15 of them are going to be taking part in the No Man's Land cross event. Maybe these are preliminary plans, or maybe we're actually going to get those. I don't know. That's part of the fun in this project, is that I've read so little of it, I don't know what's to come. So maybe we'll get these stories. Maybe Lois will pop up. I don't remember that, though. But again, I wouldn't. I didn't read it. Now, we get a little bit about the outgoing pencil, Graham Nolan. He chimes in to name his artistic influences. And they are the more traditional superhero-y Batman artists, Jim Aparo, Don Newton, and the like. He does say that he, quote, doesn't do the vampire-slash-monster Batman, which kind of feels like a drive-by comment on the Kelly Jones design. Maybe I'm reading into it. I don't know. Next up, the flagship Batman, where Doug Mensch talks about the need for Bruce Wayne to be a part of this story. And he talks a bit about the creation and introduction of Vesper Fairchild, easy for me to say, as a love interest for Bruce. He mentions Batman being trapped in the cave and Commissioner Gordon being trapped under the Bat Signal, which of course we did see early on. He also talks about a Ratcatcher story, with the baddie having set up shop in the subways, with Batman and Robin making use of a rocket car or something. Now, we haven't seen that yet. Maybe we will as we get closer to No Man's Land proper. Last we saw Ratcatcher, he was running shotgun with old Artie Brown in the Huntress spoiler one-shot, so we know he's out, we know he's around, so I bet we will see that story. Mensch then talks about a serpent conspiracy story, which features a whole lot of snake-themed baddies, and not sure if that's something we'll see or not. Then he talks about a quirky offbeat story he wants to tell. He describes it as being Will Eisner-ish, and it's called Geordie's Bad. And we actually won't see that story until a 2001 Legends of the Dark Knight arc. So, is it in continuity? I mean, what is continuity, right? Who knows? But, yeah, that one won't be seen during No Man's Land. Next up, some Shadow of the Bat, where Alan Grant talks up the psychological bent of Shadow. and how he's used to that he uses it to tell deeper stories and to explore the psychology of whoever the villain of the arc is. He talks about how it was in Shadow where we kick off the Cataclysm event and how he covered the whole of the Quake hitting. He teases his Aftershock story, which features Mr. Freeze and the ultimate Clayface. Now, Clayface was apparently trapped under the Earth, but the Quake opened a fissure that he could climb out of. He intends to bring Scarface and the Ventriloquist back as major players. Okay. Also, Joe Potato. Joe Potato, a private investigator that Grant created way back in Detective Comics number 594, December 1988 cover. Now, the DC Wiki says that his last ever appearance was in Shadow of the Bat number 50. So I'm guessing old Tater Joe ain't gonna be one we'll have to add to our No Man's Land chessboard. Of course, the Wiki could be wrong. I'm kind of hoping it is, because I'd like to discuss Joe Potato a little bit more. Now, Mark Buckingham, Bucky, he talks up how challenging it's been to hit his stride on Shadow, but he thinks it's all going to come together with the Quake story. Next up, Legends of the Dark Knight. Archie Goodwin, who he is unfortunately not long for this world at this point. I believe in next month's books, as we're going, they're going to have an obituary for Archie in there. Now, he talks up the importance of Legends existing as it's like its own self-contained standalone thing. Which, I mean, it's going to tie in. It's going to be forced to tie in. He hypes some upcoming story arcs. Makes me wonder if maybe he doesn't even realize that Legends will be forced to tie into No Man's Land. And, I mean, a couple of very important bits are going to happen in Legends as well. So, things that I'm definitely looking forward to discussing. Finally, for our books with Bat in the title, we have Batman Chronicles. And this one is kind of all over the place. It feels like neither Denny nor Jordan Gorfinkel yet realize that the quarterly will be tying in with No Man's Land. After number 12's Cataclysm tie-in, they seem to think, or at least the story they're telling here, is that Chronicles will go back to being quirky and weird and kind of left to its own devices. They also talk about some Hollywood talent popping in on Chronicles to try their hand at spinning a Batman yarn. Bob Gale is name-dropped specifically. And, yeah, we will be seeing him in the credits during No Man's Land. From here, we jump into our side books. Now, Azrael, not a whole lot of No Man's Land in this piece. Outside of Azrael number 40's Bane Chase. Now, Az won't be tying back into the cross event until the proper Road to No Man's Land era. So it's completely possible that, that they didn't even know that at this point. At the point in which this was written, like we saw in the Denny essay, there was a, you know, we knew there was a crossover coming, but we didn't know what it would turn into. And maybe they didn't know in the offices either. Next up, Catwoman, where Devin Grayson says that she used her own personal experiences as a former San Franciscan to explore Selina's reactions to the Gotham quake. And then we get a brief synopsis of issues 56 and 57. Post-Cataclysm, Catwoman will be jumping into a pair of three-part stories, the first one featuring Scarecrow, then the Joker, and those do happen in a post-Quake Gotham, though have no NML Crossing-centric branding. Likely, if we discuss those at all, they'll be in a meanwhile segment. Now, I'm pretty sure Catwoman will eventually be headed out of town at some point, because her No Man's Land proper tie-ins feature her trying to get back in to Gotham City, so she's probably going to go somewhere. Next up, Nightwing. Dick will be back in Bloodhaven, Bloodhaven, with issue 21. Chuck Dixon says, Bloodhaven, Bloodhaven, is far south of the epicenter and doesn't get nearly as much damage. But, because of corruption and payoffs, the buildings in Bloodhaven, Bloodhaven, were all built below code, so the quake resulted in more destruction than it should have. We find out here that Dick is going to quietly buy the apartment building he lives in, and he'll largely be sticking to his own stories until some later branded No Man's Land tie-ins. And finally, we have Robin, and we find out here that Robin is going to be the one who manages to suss out the true identity of the Quake Master. And also, Tim is going to get some Aftershock issues, where he'll be forced to explore some things in his personal life, which should be fun to discuss here. Robin seems to be tying in more than a lot of the side books, at least for this leg of the journey. And it's funny, I've been doing some side research here for potential prequel projects, like like I mentioned a couple episodes ago, doing something with Contagion and Legacy, even going back to the entire Nightfall saga into Prodigal and Troika. And it's weird how many of those end in an issue of Robin. It must have just been like the end of the month book or something, but it seems so strange that these big events wrap up in Robin, of all books. And Cataclysm will also be wrapping up in Robin. But that is our Dark Times column, along with some added flavor from the side books. But it's kind of an interesting look behind the curtain, you know, where, I don't know, maybe we find out that not everything was known just yet, at least at the time that this was written, or perhaps DC was playing their cards close to the vest and didn't want everything to get out. Now, the other piece I wanted to look at is, it's pretty cool. It's made to look like an actual FEMA report. It's the FEMA Guide to Gotham City, written by Matthew Brady. And it's really, really cool. We get an initial report about the quake here. 7.6 on the Richter scale, of course. The 18th strongest quake in United States history. And East Coast quakes, of course, they're not very common, and they do cite two of them in this FEMA report. One in Cape Ann, Massachusetts, that occurred in 1755. This was November 18th, 1755, at approximately 4:30 a.m. It was between a 6.0 and a 6.3 on the Richter scale, resulted in zero deaths, and 1,300 to 1,600 chimneys were damaged. Different times. There was another quake in Charleston, South Carolina in 1886. That was August 31st of that year at approximately 9:50 p.m. This one registered between a 6.9 and a 7.3 on the scale, resulted in 60 deaths, $5 to $6 million in damages in 1886 dollars, and 2,000 buildings having been completely destroyed. Back to our report, there is a rumor that the Gotham quake may have been, quote, accelerated by unknown forces, which, I mean, tectonic whatever the hells haven't entirely been ruled out yet, right? And maybe they didn't want to spoil anything. Who knows? Some notable damage. Highway 61 was destroyed. The Davenport Center toppled over. Fires are raging all throughout the city. All subway tunnels have collapsed. And older sections of the city are the most extremely damaged. They list those places as Chinatown, Stocktown, the Theater District, and Uptown. Lip service is paid to Bruce Wayne's foresight in having all his buildings retrofitted to meet current Japanese standards in earthquake proofing. Wayne Corp buildings are currently being used as shelters and triage for the injured. The National Guard and Army Reserves have been given limited martial law power, and they will shoot all looters on sight. There are isolated pockets in the city that have sprung up to start their own crude governments. Now, these are marked as red zones and are not to be entered without an armed escort and proper federal identification. And we'll go into the locations of some of these red zones later on. The FEMA mission is listed as aiding and assisting all Gotham citizens in need, removing all debris, the aforementioned limited martial law. Workers are forbidden from carrying firearms, and workers must keep out of any interactions between law officers and citizens, unless specifically asked for aid by the officer, and failure to follow these rules will result in incarceration and federal charges, so they are not messing around. From here, we jump into some facts and figures, and nebulous numbers here. Nebulous numbers that I'm pretty sure are going to be contradicted the entire run of this program. Estimated fatalities, between 50,000 and 100,000. Estimated injuries, 4.5 million to 12 million. Estimated missing and trapped Gothamites, 10,000 to 50,000, with numbers dropping 10% every 24 hours. Damage in dollars, hundreds of billions and into the trillions. Because, the doy, no one in Gotham had earthquake insurance. Geological activity, there were 265 aftershocks, the highest one of those reaching a 4.0 on the Richter scale. The only transport in and out of Gotham are helicopters, and there are 14 drop zones in Gotham currently. Communication. WGNS AM is the only radio station still active, and they are on, 24-hour earthquake coverage. I'm assuming that's the station that Vesper Fairchild talks on, because we did hear her. I'm assuming that's got to be it. Now we jump into some extreme crisis points. The Theater District, and we saw that in Detective 720, where the Davenport Center went down. Buddingdale's Department Store, as seen in Catwoman number 56. It's described here as a 12-story department store, which has been pancaked down to 4. No looting, please. Gotham Transit, and we've seen this all throughout the arc. And again, it's estimated that tens of thousands of commuters are still trapped in the collapsed subways. Babylon Towers, and I just recently encountered Babylon Towers in my Contagion read-through, and I wasn't sure it was even still a thing at this point. Now, if you're unaware, it was a fortified city within a city, like a self-sustaining sort of fort for the true elites of Gotham. They, simply put, they don't even have to step foot into Gotham City proper. Everything they could ever want or need is inside this fortified city, the Babylon Towers. It's an interesting concept, and it's where the apocalypse plague sort of started to be a thing in Gotham, to the point where even now, per FEMA, Gothamites are encouraged to stay upwind of the place. We got Wayne Tower, and they're still standing. They are the main shelter, hospital, yada, 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 for Gotham. And there are also mass graves, and we saw that in Detective Comics 721. And there are 4 locations around the city, and they do note here that rat infestations are starting to become a big problem. Next up, FEMA lists some people of interest, starting with Marion Grange, the mayor of Gotham City, who got President Clinton to declare Gotham a federal disaster within a half hour of the quake. It says here that Grange is well respected by Gothamites. Next up, James Gordon, the commish. He has limited command over the National Guard due to the whole martial law and emergency declaration, and it's listed here that he is widely respected as well. We got Sarah Essen Gordon, the mayoral liaison to the GCPD and the interim director of Gotham Emergency Services. She's also the wife of James Gordon and a former interim police commissioner. Now, in the story right before Contagion, there was like a political upheaval. It was just a kind of a disaster. Different mayor, don't remember his name. I should have wrote it down. But she briefly took over for Jim Gordon. But then she was replaced with this Andy Howe, a puppet commissioner by whatever the hell the name of the mayor before Grange was. He was a real douche. Next up, Barbara Gordon. She's a private citizen and a computer whiz who set up a system collecting survivors and shares important information via her website, GothamQuake.com, which is a website that I now own. It's just a redirect to Crisis on Infinite Earths for now, but I don't know, I saw it, I couldn't resist, I thought it'd be funny. I guess joke's on me, who knows. Now, I did try looking up in the Wayback Machine to see if this was a site that DC actually used back in the long ago, but it doesn't look like anything was saved from that far back, so who knows, maybe something will pop up somewhere down the line and we'll be able to dig through what used to be. Next up, Bruce Wayne. He's also a private citizen who opened up his still-standing buildings as relief centers for the injured and displaced Gothamites, which is to say, pretty much all the Gothamites. It's noted here that his own home, Wayne Manor, which is located in Bristol, was severely, severely damaged. Finally, we got Batman. The who now? Now, he is written off as just being an urban legend, though some relief workers do claim to have seen a humanoid bat character running around. Though, those relief workers were also quite exhausted, so grain, shaker, however much salt you want to toss for that one. FEMA workers are encouraged not to approach him. Finally, we have some notes here, where there's a list here of other assumed superhumans/metahumans who are active in Gotham. And among them are Hitman, Huntress, Sentinel, which is what Alan Scott was going by, the Golden Age Green Lantern, Catwoman, and Nightwing. Now, metas are encouraged to contact an agent S. Beatty of FEMA if they'd like to offer any assistance. There's a note here that Blackgate has been damaged with lots of baddies left running around. Arkham Asylum is still a question mark, and Gotham is now under a dusk to dawn curfew, which is being enforced. I don't know if people who break the curfew are being shot on sight or not, but it's probably best to stay inside if you have an inside to stay within. Now, the last bit here, you probably could stop the episode right now. It's basically me going through the Gotham City map, which probably isn't nearly as much fun for you as it was for me. But I did want to include it here. This is the sort of stuff that always kind of tickles me. Like when we used to get stuff like this in annuals and specials and secret files and origins, this stuff is just fun for me. Anyway, Gotham here is separated into 24 regions, and I'll try and remember to share this picture. It's here where, like, I'm reminded that it's Wizard, where maybe some T's are left uncrossed and I's are left undotted. It's a bit of a... I don't know. I'm not sure exactly how legitimate or referable this map is, but let's get into it here. Now, District 1 is the central business district, and it is home to two extreme destruction sites and also the theater district. Some notable architecture, we have the Gotham Stock Exchange, the Bank of Gotham, the Gotham State Building, the Butler Museum of Modern Art, and the Gotham Twin Towers. I didn't realize that Gotham had half of those things. 2, the Lower East Side, which has a red zone, and 2 helicopter drop-off points, 2 in and 1 out, so 1 right outside the border. It does have a Wayne Corp building site, so people are staying there. Also, it has the Luxor Oil Terminal and the Conrail Switchyard. Next, Chelsea has a Wayne Corp building site and 2 helicopter drop-off points right outside the border. It's also the home of Gotham University, the Gotham Planetarium, and Kingston Square. 4, the East River, which is where the Gotham Reservoir is, and it's probably where we spent at least some of this issue of Catwoman we discussed 100 years ago today. Next, Bristol is an extreme destruction site, also has a red zone, also has a mass grave, also has a helicopter drop-off, and also has a Wayne Corp building. It's also the home of Wayne Manor, Crest Hill, and the Gotham City Yacht and Tennis Club. Next, we got Bryant Town, which is home to a mass grave. And that's it. Chinatown gets nothing. Nothing there. Neville has a red zone and the Ritz Hotel. Midtown has the Wayne Towers. It's not labeled as a Wayne Corp building for some reason. I don't know. The Kane Center, Gotham City Hall, and Gotham General Hospital. The waterfront has a red zone, and I'm pretty sure later on in No Man's Land we do have a story about the waterfront, and I think Bane's part of it. But we'll get there when we get there. Next is Uptown, also known as Name Drop Avenue, because everything's named after an artist here. We got the Sprang Building, Robinson Park, the Adams Convention Center, and another Kane Center? Yeah, probably the first bit telling me that Wizards might not be the best source of information here. A T left uncrossed, or maybe crossed twice, I don't know. Next, the Bowery, which has a mass grave and Park Row. Glendale has a helipad and the Gotham Institute of Technology. Evanstown has a Wayne Corp building. Irving Grove has a helipad and a mass grave. It's also the home of the Dayton Forest Reserve, the Spring Mountain Ski Resort, and Front Street Mall. We got Gotham Village, which has a helipad, a red zone, and a Wayne Corp building. Somerset ain't got nothing. We got Scituate? I don't know how to say that word. It's S-C-I-T-U-A-T-E. Scituate? Who knows? Whatever the case, it has a Wayne Corp building, and there's a helipad right outside the border. It's the home of Gotham Stadium, Wayne Field, Dean Stadium, and a dot without a label. Again, it's Wizard. Maybe it's a third Kane building. I don't know. Next up, Lintown, which has a helipad and a Wayne Corp building. Also, Gotham International Airport. Victoria Place ain't got nothing. Little Stockton, or Stocktown, as it was labeled earlier in the issue, has a Wayne Corp building and a helipad. It's also the home of Gotham Gardens and that Budding Dales department store we saw in the last issue of Catwoman. Manchester has a helipad, a red zone, and a Wayne Corp building. It's also where Babylon Towers is slash was. Also the Manchester Viaduct and the Van Dyck Gallery. Next, we got Coventry, which has two helipads and a Wayne Corp building. It's also got the Higher Historical Library, the Gotham Zoo, and the Priory. Finally, we got Charon, which has a Wayne Corp building and one helipad in, one helipad out. It's also the home of the Roselawn Cemetery, Gotham Mercy Hospital, and Gotham Memorial Cemetery. It's worth noting here that Arkham Asylum is shown as being just outside the border of Charon, just to the north on the mainland. And again, apologies for going through that entire map, but it was a lot of fun for me. Probably not so much fun to listen to or make sense out of. It's like, this is audio, but what are you going to do? It tickles me. Hopefully, it at least gives a little bit of a geographical context as to where the story's happening and what might be going on here. And again, it's Wizard, so shake or assault. Who knows how referable this actually is. But I will say I had a lot of fun going through it here, and wouldn't have been able to do that without my pal Adam sending me the scan. So big, big thanks to Adam from the Wizards podcast, who, fingers crossed, I will remember to link. Though, I mean, my linking probably won't cause like a surge of listeners heading that way, but we do what we can, right? But I think that's where we're going to shut it down for today here. We do have some mailbag, but since this went very long, we'll save that for next time. And of course, if you'd like to be part of the mailbag, please feel free to write in. You can find me several different ways. You can find me at weirdcomicshistory@gmail.com, Chris is on infiniteearths.com, or gothamquake.com, I guess, 90s X-Men on Facebook, Ace Comics on Twitter. I just love hearing from people. I love having the conversations that we're having. It's been really just so much fun. So big thanks to everyone who's written in. And for those who are thinking about it, I invite you to. Please, please do. But with all that being said, let's take this one home. I'd like to thank you all so much for choosing to share some of your day with me today. And until next time, as always, I'll talk to you again real soon. See ya. Makes it harder to think straight, starting over after it breaks, starting over when the story's got an astounding twist. You've